Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Aki and Bree are here to start off the show. Jacob will be here when Jacob realizes that the show started. How are you two doing?
Pretty good.
My life sucks.
Cool. So does mine. But our lives are about to get better and funnier because the only... Chris Serrani, a.k.a. Flick, is on the show. Flick, how you doing, buddy?
Well, you know, I'm upright, walking, and breathing. What more could anybody ever ask for? Woo!
Money. $1 million, preferably.
Yeah. Two, I could do a lot more with two. Could you imagine how many pinball machines I could buy with $2 million, you know?
Oh, man, that'd be awesome. Wait, if we're talking pinball... What pinball tables do you want?
Well, dude, the only two pinball tables I have is Jurassic Park 2020 and 1990 Simpsons.
Damn. That's what I got.
But I'll tell you, I'm really, really tempted to be highly irresponsible. And I mean highly irresponsible because of the price tag. But, you know, because a certain Grant Henry worked on a certain Avatar table, I kind of want to buy it.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that would be incredible.
Do you want to take a guess at what that table costs new?
I want to say like $2,400, maybe?
$15,000.
$15,000. Wow.
$15,000.
That's significantly more than I thought.
That is for like the collector edition one, because if you're going to get one, you may as well just go all out.
Yeah. True.
Otherwise, I think the lesser editions, like 12.5 or a little bit less, but still over 10 grand.
That's a lot of money.
Who needs cars?
Some people. I don't know why.
Yeah, I was tempted to just pull the trigger on it, but I've got some potentially weird work stuff coming up in mid-September where I'll have to make choices. Which company do I go with? Or do I go with none?
Ooh. Before then, you should take a trip to Pennsylvania and hang out with me for a couple of days.
Yeah, I need to do some road trips. I think I've got 12 days of PTO left, and I'm like, you know, I'd like to do a Texas run, and I kind of want to do a run out to Seattle to hang out with Alexander Brandon. Plus, I've never, ever done the West Coast Drive before. Hmm. Yeah, I've never really gone through Montana all the way.
I don't think I could do that drive.
You can do anything if you want to suffer enough. But I figure driving west, I've got a cousin that lives in Bozeman, Montana. I could potentially crash at their house. And then it's only another like 10, 11 hours from there to Seattle.
Yeah, that's why I would do the loop I would do when I would go to Arkansas, where I would go to Tennessee to visit my dad, then to Arkansas to visit everyone, then to Missouri to visit or Illinois to visit Sean, and then back home. Like, it gave me stops along the way.
I need to go visit Sean and fam too. I want to go everywhere, man.
Well, when are they going to come to you next? VGMCon, I presume? When
is people only ever come here during VGMCon time.
When is the next VGMCon?
Oh, it's in April every year. As for the exact date, I forget. But with the quick power of the internet, VGMCon.org is the website. It's a wonderful place to go. Everybody should go there. Please go there. It will be
yeah, kind of close, won't you?
I know. I couldn't do VGM because of my wedding this last time. So, yeah.
You're close, aren't you?
I'm relatively close, yeah.
Like Minnesota, Wisconsin?
I'm in Wisconsin, yeah.
Nice.
I'm really close to Illinois, so I'm like right on the southern border, not too far from Minnesota. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, the next one will be April 16th through 17th, or sorry, 16th through the 18th, 2027. Tickets on sale now.
Hell yeah.
And
any word on bands yet?
I have no idea yet. We haven't really done much for staff meetings yet on things.
What were the three bands I said that if they're there, I'm guaranteed that I'd fly out? The One-Ups, well, Tiberian Sons, and was it Lonely Rolling Stars?
Ooh, LRS would have to make a return, man.
Oh, I know. That's why I don't think it was that one. I know there was a third one, though.
So I do know that, I'm not sure if you knew that Robbie Benson was moving. Do you know where he moved to?
No.
Minnesota.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. So, some more good musicians local to the area.
That's cool. See,
everybody eventually comes to the center of the U.S. because it's average misery versus more extreme misery with heat and weather and like torrential storms.
It's cold as fuck up there, isn't it?
That would be glorious.
Well, Joe, again, we get the extremes of everything, so it's average misery.
That is just a few of the extremes. We get them all.
We don't get hurricanes, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yet.
We don't get earthquakes.
Yet.
Yet.
We don't get comets. We definitely don't get comets that smash into the ground. We don't get those.
I don't believe that at all, but okay.
That's a huge yet, because we know that's coming.
Oh, good times.
Oh, I can't wait.
Either way.
Just a comet obliterates the planet.
And none of us will ever know. Poof.
Yay.
Anyway, good things are coming. VGM Con, good people, good times, and me spending too much on pinball machines that I will likely bring to VGM Con.
Very cool. So we might see Avatar at VGM Con?
Potentially.
That would be huge if you could say, hey, we have the Avatar pinball machine at VGM Con.
And I'm sure Grant would be there. So
yeah.
And if I had at least three
machines. Metroid Metal was the other one. That's right. Yeah.
I'm sure if I had three machines set up, Grant would probably be like, all right, I'm going to do some impromptu about pinball audio stuff with physical machines right here. I'll be like, yep, here's the keys. Have fun. I'm going somewhere else. Although, no, I would probably actually stick around for that because that'd be fun as hell.
Yeah. I love
it. Plus, I'd be the one fixing pinball. The machines anyway.
Bree, if you could own a pinball machine, which one would you want to go for?
Oh, well, I just found out that a Labyrinth pinball existed.
Yeah.
So that's pretty hype. I'm gonna talk about some pinball in my news later too. So
ooh.
There's some new pinball just released. So yeah.
Very cool. Well, we'll get to the news eventually, but
yeah.
We're chatting with our buddy Flick for a while first.
Yeah.
Like, have you been gaming lately? Is there anything you've been playing?
So, I will fully admit that I have been 100% dead to the just computer and gaming and music world for just a number of years. It's like,
fair.
Yes, I do have Steam installed. Oh, wait, do I even have it installed on this computer? Okay, it is on there. I'll fully admit I've been going through just a really negative mental phase of my life, and I'm doing my best to try and get out of things, mainly just cleaning up a lot of physical messes. You know, I do too much with projects and collecting thingies to try and fix up and sell and whatever, and I'm trying to do my woodworking table projects, and I'm trying to work on the house, and it's too many things, and it really just kind of gets to me. Plus, you know, it's, as we all are, getting up in age, and yeah, you know, things don't seem to get too much better.
Dude, I have to take, like, daily gut health gummies so that I don't, like, get constipated. I'm getting old.
Heck, maybe I should do stuff like that. But I should also just stop drinking beer, but because I'm sure that honestly affects things. And just my
you
bad.
You should crack one open right now.
Well, yeah, faster you drink them all, the faster you can quit. Problem solved.
Oh, interesting. That's a good concept. Actually, I do have a little shot glass with some Casamigos tequila right here. So, cheers.
Cheers. Hockey, do you want to get shit-faced too?
I do not have the prerequisite alcohol right now for it.
Oh, actually, I'm going to pour you some of this tequila through the microphone, and the electrons shall deliver.
So you're going to stunt liver for us, is what you're saying?
I approve 100%.
That, or I'm going to
all day, baby.
That, or I'm going to pour alcohol over $1,000 microphone and go.
Yeah.
Stunt liver, beautiful.
Oh, good times. I'm trying to just get back into just little dibble dabble things that I can kind of just tinker with, you know, like the old days, you know, like the 1 hour compo things like I used to do, or the web comic audio stuff I used to do for fun, where I'd see a page of a comic and go, I'm gonna make audio to that, and it was just fun. That's the stuff I want to try and get back into. But I have to be in that mental.
You've done some crazy audio dramas and just insane projects musically over the years.
And then, well, yeah, like doing all the Bite Kid stuff, like that was absolutely fun as hell to do.
One day I want to do a voice on that.
you did. Remember?
I just did Ooga Chaka. Like I want to do like an actual role in one of those.
Oh, I know what you mean. But yeah, and like
I want to feel special.
Well, I know. I think it was Andy Goth had posted a thing on Facebook about like kind of like an OC remix audio thing, and was looking for voice actors, and like I was gonna try and just do a quick thing for it, and I'm like, I can't get myself to do anything. It's like I would just sit here and stare at the wall, and I'm like, I just can't do anything. And it's that horrible mental block, man. And it's even me just going, I'm just not good at this anymore. I haven't done it in so long. Everyone's so much better than me. Why bother? And I know that's BS. I just need to get my brain up. So
I'm in a similar funk. Everyone knows. I think we've all kind of been in a funk lately, but I legit think I'm in that midlife crisis part of my life where, like, I'm trying to sell off stuff that I don't need anymore, and, you know, I'm drastic weight change, which, you know, visually looking significantly different.
Which, by the way, again, I am super proud of you for what you've been able to do for yourself so far there.
I want you to visit so you could see me and, like... Because you haven't seen me since last VGMCon.
Or what I should do is I'll just give you like a train ticket and you can take the train to Fargo and then hang out with Fargo because it's so cool here, man.
I mean, I probably could. It's not like I have anything else going on. Just got to do the show. I could just do it from your place.
I mean, you could. There is basically a whole studio set up here. There's computers. There's these monitors, microphones, speakers, mixers. In fact, hell, if you want to get super fan.
We're the only generation that knows how to use all that shit.
Dude, I own, like, a bunch of the equipment I own that we use at VGMCon. I don't know how to run it. I didn't care. I just bought the stuff, and I went, you people that know how to run this, run it.
I had like to go to my mom's to hook up her router.
Boy.
The thing you just plug into the fucking wall, I had to go help with.
I mean, did she ever do one before?
The problem isn't my mom. The problem is she has a niece, like my niece is there, who is like 17, and should know how to do this stuff, but she is clueless to technology. When did that happen? Like, kids today are clueless about tech.
Well, that's because they only know phone, TikTok. Wow. Yeah. Videos, phone.
Can't even spell you're right.
You're.
Damn kids.
One quick thought before I forget it. So you were mentioning just selling off things that you don't need and whatever. And I actually think that's a good thing because I'm trying to do similar things. It's like, why should I hang on to things that don't actually bring me any joy, take up space, and are worth something? Because I always figure I can always get stuff again. If I sold off some video game that meant a lot to me and I wanted it when I'm 60, I'm sure I could buy it again. It won't be that exact copy, but who cares?
Yeah.
But it might be a shit ton expensive, like Chrono Trigger or something.
Well, dude, that's why when I'm 60, it's like I'll have billions of dollars and I can pay the $1 million for a copy of Chrono. Which it already doesn't matter because I already have a cartridge of it. So, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it's like I'm sitting on so much stuff. Hell, I moved into this house 5 years ago and I still have boxes that are packed up with stuff. It's like, dude, huh, does any of that matter?
Can anyone remember how long I've been at this house? Because I know it was before COVID. I still have boxes in my room of that I have yet to do anything with. And they've been like water damp. Yes, actually. My Playboy stash has been water damaged, so we got to just junk them eventually.
Water damn, Jesus.
Quote unquote.
No, legit. There was a really, really bad storm, and it just like blew in through where the air conditioner was.
I'll bet it blew right on in.
You know, I was going to thank you for the sub, but you're being a wiener face.
A sub? Would you prefer to be a dom?
In the butt, dude.
I've been waiting for that.
It's begun.
I'm waiting, Joe.
Or?
Do you have to thank me? It's a law.
Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me!
I even gave you that helpful fact in chat that it's been 26 months.
Jesus.
What's been 26?
Jacob has been subscribing to the SML podcast for 26 months now, currently on a 9-month streak. So apparently 10 months ago, someone was more important than us.
Yeah, we stopped getting Amazon Prime for a bit.
You piece of shit.
You know what? That's fair.
It is fair. That's fair. Although we use it much.
I only got Amazon Prime again so we could watch the Yakuza show, and we still have yet to watch it.
I have Prime and sometimes I go, why do I have this? I never take advantage of like the video stuff. And then when I order something where it's like, it's Friday I order, it's like Saturday delivery or Sunday, and I'm like, oh, you know what, Sunday's fine. Sunday comes around, it's like, sorry, there's a problem with your delivery. And then Monday and then Tuesday, and I'm like, what is so difficult here?
Wow.
And then UPS shows up and delivers it. I'm like, oh, so Amazon
just can't. That sounds like a UPS issue. It's like, I guess it helps that up in, I guess, like a half hour away in Hazleton is an Amazon fulfillment center. So we'll just get Amazon vans dropping shit off at our house direct at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we could
order stuff and sometimes get it same day we've had.
Yeah, we
get our money's worth out of Prime. What was that you said?
I said we've got a pretty big ass Amazon warehouse in Fargo. It's like one of the massive buildings.
Yeah, they're taking over the world. God love it.
Oh no, you want to take over the world? One massive thing that's being built north of Fargo right now is a huge ass data center. Oh boy,
we have one being built here too.
Yeah,
right by our nuclear power plant.
I mean, they're basically going to need a freaking nuclear power plant to power this thing, so I can hardly wait for my utilities to go up for no reason.
Oh,
yeah.
So excited.
But bro, everybody needs this AI. Need it. You have to have it.
Dude, I hate AI so much at this point. The way that it has forced everything to go up in price is just gross, because like AMD and Nvidia are both increasing graphics card prices again.
Hey dude, you know what I started doing? I picked up one of the Intel Arc video cards. Cheap as hell. And I think performance wise, it's supposed to be pretty dang good. I'm going to pop it in one of these machines again and try playing a game on it. But I mean, $350 for, it's like a 12 gig video card. And if it holds up to what I would need it to do, I'm certainly not going to spend over $1,000 on like an Nvidia or an AMD.
True.
So
I need to upgrade my PC just in general, because we got it at COVID time. I remember we got it because we had to make an appointment to go into Best Buy to shop for a computer.
God, what a time, huh?
Yeah. We had to make sure that we had our masks on, and we had to go in only when we were flagged into the store. Man, that was a weird fucking time.
Hey, do you need a small laptop by chance? I still have like a stack of probably 30 of these things.
Sure, send one over. I could do something with it.
Laptop.
He can replace his comic collection of dirty comics. Yeah.
I don't have comics. The only comics I ever collected were Ninja Turtles. And I sold those a while ago. You're sorry for Ninja Turtle? What?
I never liked the Ninja Turtle comics at all. I never thought they were very good. I liked the show. The show was great. The movies were acceptable. I didn't like the comics, though. I don't know why.
Well, which version of the comics did you read? The originals or the Archie comics?
Not the Archie ones.
The Archie ones are the good ones. They were more of the TV show.
Oh, okay. I may have liked those then. Shit.
I would love if they did one anthology of that.
And good news, my desk is almost clean.
Yay!
Especially now that you've gotten rid of an extra laptop, I assume?
Those are all downstairs, so I'm in the upstairs of the garage right now. All that crap's downstairs. Yes, me and my fancy two-story garage. It just means there's more room for shit. Help me!
Yay!
Nah.
Well, since Jacob is here, should we dive into news and chat about the news of the week?
No!
I mean, yes.
I mean, what happened this week?
No, I don't have much, but Bree apparently has a bunch of news, so I'll just zip through mine quick.
I have a bunch of stuff to talk about, yeah. Just random stuff that came across my feed.
I'll just zip through mine quick. I only have four little bits here. Super Mario Sunshine is hitting the GameCube Classics Online August 13th.
Nice.
If you have the Nintendo Switch Online with the expansion pack, there you be. PlayStation Plus monthly games for August were announced, with Dying Light 2, Stay Human, Big Walk, and Signalis being revealed as the game.
Nice. Not bad at all.
The PS5 has shipped over 95 million units.
Good on it.
Yeah. And then Sony is also refusing to budge on their disc-ending stance, as they will, quote, cautiously move forward with their plans despite the backlash surrounding the situation. So there are tons of people demanding that they don't completely give up on discs, and Sony's just basically sent out a huge statement to say, fuck you. We do what we
want. That's about right.
So what's your actual feeling on that personally? Is that kind of a, hey, I'm actually upset about this?
For me personally, it's not a huge issue because I buy a lot digital. But I know I'm not the only person in the world. Amazingly.
Yeah, and they're going to figure something out real fucking quick that they aren't going to get as much money as they think they will. Because you have to remember, a whole shit ton of people buy games and import them into countries where these assholes don't sell games or the systems even. And they make a bunch of money off of that.
And now they're basically being told, play.
Yeah, because they can't make an account or anything. So, like, they're about to lose out on a whole shit ton of money because they're being dumb fucks. So, it is what it is. They're doing the dumb.
I always have my mental worry that one day, just, hey, a server could get shut off or something, and like, oh yeah, the game you paid for that was working just fine for 15, 20 years.
You mean like almost immediately after they announced that and their whole network went down for like 24 hours?
Yeah.
Or announced that and they've taken away people's stuff that people have bought, both video game and film, I think it was, before. Yeah. Taking it straight out of their account.
Movies out of people's accounts.
Because latest was Studio Canal.
Yeah.
Well, and think about timelines here. Like, how long has Steam been around?
Forever.
Well, 3 years, something like that. 3-4
Yeah. Definitely 2 or 3, yeah.
Well, think in the grand scheme of, like, just modern internet stuff, it's like, okay, we're 2026 now. It's like, yeah, internet stuff was happening in late 90s, early 2000s, but, like, Steam came around, what, sometime early 2000s, I think? I can't remember.
But I just looked it up, apparently 2002, so it is old enough to drink. Yeah.
Okay. Jesus. But now you think about that timeline, and that's really not that long that it's been around.
Yeah.
Is it still going to be around another 25 years? Or is suddenly that whole system just dead and gone, and whoops, sorry!
Yeah.
Don't say that. That would hurt my fucking soul with the amount of shit that I got on there. Oh, that would hurt. That would hurt so bad.
Yeah, we just gotta find the ways to make it physical.
Physical! Physical!
I mean, if you're really, really concerned about physical, I would definitely go with, like, GOG. Because with that, they don't, like, have anything where they're like, oh yeah, you have to sign to your account to play this. You know, it's just here, you own this now, and you can just take those files and burn them onto a fucking CD if you want. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're all DRM-free on GOG.
Yeah, I did buy some stuff on there, like, years ago. I do keep forgetting about it, because doesn't most everything end up on there?
A lot of stuff, but not everything.
Yeah, you'll find significantly more on Steam. Everything goes to Steam, or it goes to Itch.io, and then some of it goes to GOG.
Mm-hmm.
GOG's getting there, but they're not quite there yet. They're getting there, though.
Well, I
just think it's a bad move to end physical. I think not having that as an option is a huge mistake. I think the Series S is a horrible machine because it doesn't play discs. And there's no option to add any kind of disc drive, which sucks on the Xbox side of things. But they also do have a disc option available. So it's not like you're forced into digital only. You do have the option.
Yeah.
But what'll happen with next gen? Will they have a disc solution or will they not?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Because Microsoft has supposedly been trying to get this Positron project going where it's disc to digital.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even powered my PS4 on in probably a year.
I rarely turn on my PS5. Like, monthly at this point to get my free games.
How many times have you, like, sold that thing and then bought a new one, like, a year later?
A lot.
I've gone through PlayStations, yeah. Because to me, they're disposable. When we need money, like, when things are tight and we need money, that's disposable. And Xbox isn't.
Fair.
Like, if I had to sell something else, I'd probably sell the Switch. If I had to sell something else, my import 360.
Fair.
Yeah, but you have a Switch too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That makes... Yeah.
I think there's some game systems I should never sell. I've got so many things in totes. Still got the old JVC Xi sitting there.
Oh, damn. Dude, your collection is probably worth ridiculous amounts.
Yeah, I've still got a lot of PS1 games, PS2 games. Not like a ton, but I was always like the RPG hoarder of games.
Those
are
the expensive ones.
Yeah, I would buy them. I would buy them, and then I would play them for 15 minutes and go, oh, God, I just can't pay attention. I would stop playing.
Wow.
I've totally not done that before at all. Totally never. Nope. Mm-mm.
I think Suikoden was like one of the only games I ever actually managed to lock in and get through. I was like, I did it.
It's a great game. That's one of the few things I still have a collection for, actually. I have the figures of the Heroes collection and the Potch coin from one of the discs, collector's editions, and I have all the discs. So, yeah.
That's where my nickname came from.
Nice. I was wondering.
Flick was a badass.
Yeah.
And I, too, am a badass, I think.
Awesome. But do you have a blue cape and a blue bandana?
Silly could. And I've got the good looks.
All right. All right.
Let's That's make what this I should... happen.
Oh, wait. VGM Con, Age of Encores. Oh, dude. I could totally dress up as Flick because that is sort of a medieval looking thing, ain't it?
Yeah.
Do it.
Joe needs to dress up as just one of like the bartenders out of an RPG. Everybody come up and have some grog. That'd be great.
You need a tip? I could sell you a tip.
Just the tip?
No, God.
Anyway, I'll let you continue.
We have some good dick clips on here. Where are they?
Right in the ding dong!
I like that one. Where is
it? Hit me with another. Heard that one.
Oh, man.
Slap me with a good one.
Here's a good
one. You touch it if you'd like.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
And I did.
Oh, Jesus.
What the fuck? Was that to the dick?
Yep.
I'm gonna punch you in the face.
Love it. Okay.
My face is my dick. Yep.
So, what other news? That is the news I have. Aki, what do you have?
I don't got shit, because ain't nothing happened.
Okay. So, let's start with the actual news of the show. Pri.
Where to start? We were just talking about Steam a little bit ago, so let's dive into some Steam news. Steam does have limits. A game called The Spanking Exorcist or Spanking Exorcist was deemed too racy for Steam, and the devs had to negotiate to get the ghost spanking game on the platform.
Sorry, did I hear that right? A ghost spanking game?
It is a ghost spanking game. Apparently, it's like dead housewives or something that need to be spanked. So there's, you know, nudity, sexual content. But I think I was more horrified by the fact that it comes up immediately when you load in the page with an AI warning. Apparently, they used it to assist in localization and translation. Not the music or the graphics. So there's that. But, yeah.
I can't. What the hell? It's 2026 and I can't enjoy my ghost spanking video game without AI. What is this world fucking coming to?
The Spanking Exorcist is a somewhat alluring apartment complex. You avoid evil spirits while exercising the ghosts of housewives in this sexy comedy horror game.
From what I'm seeing, the AI stuff in there was localization and translation.
Yeah, that's what I just said. That's the only thing in it. It's not art and music.
It's not horrible.
It's not horrible, but I feel like there's enough people out there that can do localization and translation for pretty cheap on, you know, websites.
Fiverr.
Fiverr.
I missed when you said that because I loaded up the Steam page for this and was immediately distracted.
Yeah. There's a Steam game called Grand Theft Timeline coming out later this year that'll allow you and up to seven of your friends to jump through time and rob history and relive events, including 9/11, where you can relive the event from the perspective of someone inside the World Trade Center. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Why?
I was like, oh, wow, man, this sounds really cool. And then you're like, you can check out 9/11 as a role of somebody in the World Trade Center. It's like, well, fuck.
Yeah, apparently you go around robbing things from history.
What do you do, pickpocket people in the tower before it collapses and then out?
No, I mean, like, because there were actual vaults like in the World Trade Center that had like art and gold and shit like that. So I mean, like, okay, I get it, but also
why? So something else we were talking about earlier is the RAM supply issues. AMD has reevaluated the consumer side of things, and they are launching the Radeon RX 9050, which is an entry-level graphics card that comes in 8GB and a 4GB version, which feels like a step above onboard graphics for modern expectations.
Yeah, that sounds really bad.
And it's apparently somewhat exclusive to, they've got original manufacturer parts on it or something. I think it's already out of stock or whatever, and you can only get the 8GB version. I really feel like it's going to be snapped up for the price and put in low-end PC builds for a while, and that doesn't solve the problem.
Not even remotely.
No.
They don't care about the problem because they're still making money.
That is their current solution to consumer side of non-expensive graphic cards. I didn't like that. Let's see. Double Fine, they laid off 23 people as part of a transition to independent studio. So that was unfortunate, but you kind of had to know it was coming.
Yeah.
23 people isn't a huge amount of people in the grand scheme of things, but I don't know what their size was overall to make that.
I think it was like a fourth or a third.
Yeah.
I heard around a third of the studio.
Yeah. So let's talk about, some rumor. Ubisoft is supposedly making an Assassin's Creed codename Nebula, which is set in the Aztec Empire. Ubisoft also seems to have canceled a Far Cry extraction shooter called Project Maverick and instead have switched gears towards Project Kodiak, which is an open world first person shooter. So that there. Let's see, other gaming news. Cyan Worlds was working on a new Myst project called Codename Anglerfish, but have since canceled that. They are still working on another Myst universe thing. They showed the trailer in a recent press release of the work in progress that won't be realized in its current form, and I'm pretty excited to see what they're working on based on that. If you get a chance to go check out the Project Anglerfish or Codename Anglerfish video, it was pretty cool.
Sounds interesting.
It would have been the first new Myst game in a long time. So, yeah. Closest we had was Abduction, and that was like 6-8 years ago now, and that was slightly related, but it was not in the Myst universe. Some Dragon Age news, kind of. Basically, a former producer has spoken out saying that there are too many hurdles to a series comeback. Additionally, the conversation was about trilogy remasters being mostly off the table because almost all of the people originally involved in the game are gone from the company and no one understands the engine.
Yeah, the thing I heard is that nobody at the studio knows the engine at all, and they couldn't make it work.
Yeah, so it would take substantial effort to do that, to re-engineer that. And a few of the devs that are no longer at BioWare have formed Studio Reset and announced Eventide, a supernatural mystery game with a noir setting and a game mechanic that will allow players to approach the mystery from multiple perspectives. Related to that, EA. They recently got over the last of their regulatory hurdles in the EU for its Saudi takeover scheduled for next week, August 4th. The move will make them a private company again with this $55 billion investor group acquisition.
EA Sports. It's in the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. That's gross.
Yeah. Blood money. Yay.
Yeah. Square Enix is producing new-gen remasters, or more aptly, performance ports for Switch 2 for Octopath Traveler 1 and 2.
Okay, that's nifty.
They also talked this week about the remasters of older Final Fantasy games like 6 might not be feasible anytime soon, since they feel it would take upwards of 6 games to do the story's justice.
I mean, just do a pixel remaster. Like an HD 2D version of it.
Oh, that's
literally all people want.
Yeah.
Same game, no changes. Or maybe some quality of life stuff, but Yeah. Same game, same story, same mechanics, just HD 2D. That's all we want.
Yeah, that would be cool. It really would. There was a PlayStation patent approved for a controller with all digital buttons. Initially, I wasn't sure how I would feel about the touch-sensitive pads, but apparently it would allow users to move where the buttons are in relation to the grips for more comfort, or to switch things around if you're, like, say, playing a fighting game or something.
That thing was a joke thing. I didn't think that was actually real. Holy shit.
I looked it up, and it's apparently a thing that I don't know that it'll come to fruition, but they apparently applied for a patent for it. So, yeah.
Yeah,
I need buttons. Whatever concepts they have for that, yeah.
That's why I don't game on phones. I need buttons.
Mm-hmm. Some Xbox news. They have added more Game Pass cloud gaming to more TVs. Hisense and specific VIDAA OS compatible smart TVs will be able to play games without having an Xbox, so long as you link your Game Pass account. So they've expanded on that. And I think Hisense is a pretty popular budget brand as well. So,
you know, if they do anything with Vizio or TCL,
I don't know. More Xbox related news. I will never touch
a Samsung.
Yeah. More Xbox related news. U.S. Congressman from West Virginia demands the new Xbox CEO's resignation from the Federal Productivity and Jobs Task Force that Asha Sharma was appointed to, because he believes that the recent layoffs and hiring of H-1B visa workers is replacing American workers and should be punished. In his recent statement, he's GOP and came off unhinged in his Fox Business interview. And he just used this as a way to give an example of why he thinks that the visa program should be ended. And it's disgusting. And anyway.
Yay, racism.
Yeah.
He's an asshole.
Yeah. An innocent man was sentenced and spent 18 months in prison in Canada. Turns out he was mistaken for someone else based on an extra underscore in a Kik username using the Skyrim power words Fusroda. Authorities now believe, based on the username and IP, that they are looking for someone in California for charges of luring a child and child pornography. So this guy has lost, I think he was 23 when this happened. He's basically lost 5 years of his life at this point.
How do you get convicted when there is zero evidence?
Well, apparently this is a cross-country issue, because apparently this was related to some Wisconsin authorities, and when they put in the username, they omitted a single underscore, and that there were two Kik users that had very, very almost identical names. The difference was an underscore.
That's ridiculous.
I wouldn't trust them to do fucking anything if they fucked up that bad.
And I don't know the whole details based on the connection in Canada. But yeah, this is a huge screw up, and I hope that this gentleman gets some sort of reparations for all of this, and that they catch the actual person that was the problem in the first place.
Not only that, but now they're going to have to go through, like, every time they've ever been like, oh, this person's the criminal because this license plate. Because now you know you can't trust the dumb fucks to have put in any of the information correctly.
It's a huge mess. Huge mess. All over.
That's going to take all years over to Kik, go through.
Yep, Kik and Skyrim there. But yeah. Yeah, just an underscore of a difference. So, yep. And let's see. Next up on my list, I'm almost done here, I swear. Barrels of Fun Pinball is releasing Bon Jovi Pinball. The video reveals it is set up largely like a concert venue, and the main field art is a guitar. It'll have a backstage section at the top of the field, an encore mission, a crowd surfing jump ramp. There are 17 songs in the game, I think only 9 when it launches. It'll have tutorials of what your goals are for skill shots and things like that. There's a set list of 5 songs when you set up a game, and Living on a Prayer is always halfway through the set list. I thought that was perfect. Really halfway there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. God damn it. I was going to make that joke about how it only launches with 9, but 17 total are going to be coming. Yeah. It's like, I guess you could say it's halfway there.
Yeah. All call-outs are from concert footage of Bon Jovi. So they have, it's just thousands of hours of concert footage that they're using. There's a leveling system, an outlane flipper you can activate. The back box has high-quality video display of that concert footage from each song while playing. It's a $12,000 machine by David Van Ness, who also designed the Labyrinth and Doom tables for Barrels of Fun.
Damn.
Nice.
Like, yeah, there's some Bon Jovi.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I guess with pinball in general, it's like you don't want a theme to get too repetitive or too annoying, mm-hmm. I guess. So it's like,
yeah,
it's probably going to be an awesome machine. Maybe not the one I would go for, but I don't know. I would have to play it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It looked like a lot of fun. And the last thing I have on my list.
It's movie watch. There.
A24 has wrapped filming on the Elden Ring movie. It is expected to release March of 2028.
Nice.
Nifty.
That's all the news I've got, I swear.
It's good to hear that it's on track after the rumors of someone invading the set. And
oh, I know, right?
Love that hard time story. Elden Ring movie delayed because invaders came in, started wrecking things. Flick, any news you want to talk about?
There, had to unmute. God, news? News and what? Oof. What anything?
Anything, really.
Man, I honestly just have not paid attention to a whole lot of stuff lately.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know there's cool stuff always on the horizon. Hopefully I'll have the headspace to enjoy some of those things.
We'll get you there. Yeah. You just need snuggles with me, and you'll be good.
It's snuggles with everybody. Yay.
Right. Whoever did that can stop.
That was me.
It's Elmo's world. That would be perfect.
I do have an Elmo puppet here. I could make this even more fun for you.
Nope.
I heard him say yep. I heard that.
I said no.
I heard yes. He's very clearly yes. Yelling yes.
Once upon a time, Mustin and I were going to do a funny back and forth video thing. Like, so I bought an Elmo puppet, and I think he got, God, which one did he get? I can't remember. And yeah, we were just going to do some dumb video stuff back and forth. Never did though, because that's just how life is. But maybe future stuff. Do funny things.
Mustin came on this show like a month ago.
Sorry to hear and that. I mean, hey.
It was like the most listened to episode we've had in a long ass time. The YouTube Mustin? Video has 150 views, which for us is insanity.
I mean, Mustin's been really busting ass on some stuff lately.
He kinda has.
Kind of getting back in the scene. So definitely good on him and good on the band for doing stuff like they have been for so freaking long.
What did you think of Mustin's Final Fantasy VI album?
I don't remember if I've listened to it. Remember when I said I have not listened?
Yeah. Have you heard Dancing Mad at least?
I don't know.
I'll have to.
I know the song. I'm a terrible, terrible friend when it comes to listening to my friend's stuff. At least right now. I'm getting there, man. I'm getting there.
Dude, I'm the same. Like, I only listen to stuff if they come on the show. I'm like, oh, shit, I gotta catch up on what they've been doing.
Usually when I actually do road trip stuff, that's when I might try and bring things up and go, oh, yeah, I'm gonna listen to this. And then I'll listen to it and go, damn, that was great.
But when was the last time you listened to Elmo's World?
I listen to Elmo in my head all the time.
There you go.
Jacob, what news do you have?
So I only have two bits of news. The first one, as you might be totally surprised by, is Disney Dreamlight Valley news. Starting now, Wreck-It Ralph is now available for free. He was originally seen in very early video game footage, and then just never put into the game until now. And if your parents were religious, never bought you the beginner's Bible, he looks like he's out of that, like he's drawn from that style, which as a kid, my parents and I always used to call it the bug-eyed Bible. It's really weird, like how his eyes are in the game, and I hope they fucking fix that, because it's yeah. And the guy does not, it does not sound like John C. Reilly. Also along with that, there's a new star path, which is like, I don't even know how the hell to describe it. Like, it's just a mishmash of like whatever the fuck they wanted to sell us all on. Like, it's, some of it's 80s stuff, some of it's Aristocats stuff, some of it's like just, I don't, it doesn't make sense. Like, so, whatever. But what's really cool is that they are doing a charity bundle right now until I think it's September 22nd. I don't have a date on it. But towards the end of September, they're partnering with the Nature Conservancy of Canada. And for $4, you get a little bear cub companion and 800 moonstones, which is, I mean, you're essentially getting your money back in the form of in-game currency.
Yeah.
By helping out. So it's really cool. It's really cute. And if you play Disney Dreamlight Valley, you should go get it. I'll be getting it once I get my paycheck. Thanks. So there's that. And then I have a feeling that it's just going to be me reporting on this, like, pretty much every single Thursday, Friday, up until the movie releases, but
it's movie watch. There.
Street Fighter gave us a taste of what one of the fights is going to look like, and we got to see Blanka and Ryu go at it inside some sort of prison that Bison is running. I thought it was kind of cool. Some people think that Blanka looks cursed. I don't know. Like, I'm excited about it. My kids are excited about it. Like, we're just fucking stoked for this movie to be coming out, and October cannot get here quick enough.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. It seems like they're having fun with it.
Yeah. Like, I'm really pleased with everything I've seen so far. Oh, and oh shit. Two cameos got announced for it too. Diego and the other guy from Evo 24, like the famous fight.
Oh, Daigo and Justin Wong.
Yes, yeah, they're going. Justin Wong confirmed on Twitter that he that they're going to have a cameo somewhere in the film. So that's cool.
Justin Wong's a cool dude. He used to go to Magfest back in the day. And win everything. The early days of Magfest. Oh man. So yeah, any other news, or should we prepare to move on to review time?
I guess it's review time.
Review time.
Nope.
With that, Flick, we will let you get going. I want to thank you for coming on and hanging out with us and killing time with us. I miss you. You should definitely try visiting. We will make room for you in this place, and you can snuggle with the cats.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the invite. It honestly does help with the mental condition on life, so I always appreciate being around good people. So thanks, everybody. Good to chat with you. And I will come back to annoy you another time.
Very good. Hey. Any final words before we let you go?
I guess, I don't know. Do your best to enjoy life. Everything's not always as bad as we think it is. There's still plenty of stupid stuff. But we got each other, and we're going to do cool stuff.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Very good.
Hockey and I have each other.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true, kind of. Fuck, I hate my life.
Oh, I knew you two were BFFs.
All right. Well, y'all take care. Good to chat with you.
Have a good one.
We'll chat with you again soon.
All right. Take care, Flick.
Sounds like a plan.
Bye-bye.
Love you, buddy. All right. Thanks, review man. Time. Let's get into these. First game to talk about tonight is The Mermaid Mask, developed and published by SFB Games. Released July 16th, Switch 1 and 2, PS5 and PC for $19.99. An impossible locked room murder. Captain Mortuga lies dead beside an ancient cauldron aboard the world's strangest submarine, brewed by sketchy subjects like us. A handcrafted point-and-click with sharp humor and tricky puzzles. Dive into the next mystery game from the creators of Tangle Tower and Crow Country. Aki, tell us about your time spent with The Mermaid Mask.
Okay, so this is a point-and-click visual novel-y style detective game where you play as this skinny dude who is somewhat inept and his extremely sassy and about as inept partner, and it's fantastic. It is a colorful, weird world, and basically there has been a murder aboard this mythical submarine in this go-nowhere, dead-end port town that I'm pretty sure no one lives in anymore, and you've been called in by the new captain, a, like, 18-year-old girl, to come investigate this murder of the prior captain. And throughout this, you have to find different items aboard the ship, and you can talk to the various people about those items, as well as asking the people about each other, and you will slowly start to figure out more about all these people. And the whole thing is that this isn't one of those hard ones. This isn't like Sherlock or Agatha Christie. You don't actually have to really think a lot about this game. It's mostly just finding all of the items and then asking everyone about every individual item. And with that, you will get all the information that you need for your character to figure out what everyone's secrets are and how everything relates to the mystery at hand and everything like that. At the end, you do have to do a little bit of deductive reasoning, basically to be like, okay, here's what happened, and this is the evidence thereof. However, you can't really get it wrong either, because if you click the wrong thing, your sassy partner's like, no, stupid, that's, no, you're, no, try again. And they do that anytime you have one of these. So you will definitely finish the game if you start it. It's made very much so anyone can actually get to the end and actually see the whole thing, even if they're, you know, not good at this stuff, which is appreciated. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it's for kids, even though everything visually about it just screams, children would love this, because it's still dealing with murder. So, yeah. But yeah, it's really cool. Every one of the characters has their own style, their own way of speaking. It's all fully voice acted, and they're fantastic. And yeah, I really liked the game overall. I thought it was really good. I did play Tangled Tower once upon a time, I think 2-3 years ago, something like that. And it was also really good, and I highly recommended that. And this is just the next one in the series. So, yeah.
No. Seems like an easy verdict on this one. It's $20. What do you think?
100% for it. It is really cute, and I really like this series. So, yeah, definitely. This is for basically everybody.
Cool. Is there anything else to say about it? Because that was really quick.
The characters are fun, and I would love to see
SFB bring this to Xbox. I'm bummed that it is on everything but.
Yeah, and these would be great for Xbox, even, because it plays, you know, okay-ish with a controller, because I think I used a controller for a good chunk of this, because I always have my, you know, at-play controller connected to my PC to do everything as though it's an Xbox, because I'm really lazy. And I think I did a whole bunch of the game with the controller. I think there was some things I couldn't really do just because they weren't the buttons weren't registering correctly, which is a me issue, not necessarily a game issue.
No.
But yeah, I think this could easily get ported to the Xbox and play perfectly fine. These are really good games for that, and I would love to see that.
It's a direct sequel to Tangle Tower, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It does reference it. You don't have to have played it, but it does reference...
It's like a separate case, so...
Yeah, it's a completely separate case, but they do mention it a few different times within it and give some nods to it and the like. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends on how long it took or how much they took in from Tangle Tower on Xbox, but like, I really enjoyed that one. I would love to be able to see the sequel on Xbox, so yeah.
Here's hoping. I have a feeling it's probably going to do well enough they might get it on Xbox. It just may take them, you know, 6 months, a year, something like that. Like, tends to happen.
It is on PlayStation and Switch 1 and 2, so the console work is done. Hopefully they could bring it to Xbox. It'd be great as a Play Anywhere title, since it is on PC as well. But it sounds like a good one. So,
it's fantastic. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Up next is Arcade Archives 2 Armadillo Racing, developed and published by Hamster, released July 22nd on Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $16.99. Armadillo Racing is a racing game released by Namco Limited in 1997. Control an armadillo that rolls as it picks up speed and head for the finish line through obstacle courses filled with unique events or sprint courses designed for pure racing enjoyment. Finish in first place, and you can enjoy a fun bonus game, too. Jacob, I know you were, like, crazy excited about Armadillo Racing, so tell us, what is it?
So, Armadillo Racing is one of those, it's one of those, $1 arcade games that Bandai Namco released back in the mid to late 90s. And, I do appreciate that they were definitely, it's very apparent that they were definitely, trying all sorts of new things, even if, some of them are hits, some of them are misses. Aqua Jet 2, they're making it so you're actually, riding around on, a Ski-Doo. Armadillo Racing is, as you can imagine, you are an armadillo, and you are entering in a race against other armadillos. And how this works is that this was a trackball game, which, once again, it's another trackball game, and I'm blown away by how often, so many of these games in the ACA series, originally in its initial arcade release, it had a trackball. So this one, if you're player one, you can use a mouse. Otherwise, you're stuck using a controller if you're going to do multiplayer in this, which, by the way, you could either do two or four. Very cool.
What I'm reading, you can connect a USB trackball if you have one. We might have to look for a USB trackball and test that out.
Oh, gosh. So you play as this armadillo, and unfortunately you can't choose your colors or there's no personalities or anything like that. You are the single armadillo, and the game asks, do you want to do an obstacle course or do you want to do a sprint course? And the difference is that the sprint course doesn't really have any kind of obstacles. There's some curves and stuff like that. But it's really just it's just a solid racetrack. Meanwhile, the obstacle course has all sorts of stuff, tree roots, caves that you go into, where the stalactites fall from the ceiling. So you have that, there's mud pits, there's a river, there's a huge drop where vultures will have to come pick you up, and drop you off on the side. There's bridges, and some of them are very precariously built. Like, you really should slow down on them. And in fact, now that I'm actually like discussing it, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe that's why I keep falling, because I don't slow down on them. but there is like also like the classic, like, you know, bridges that you see in like all sorts of like jungle films, like Indiana Jones. So there's stuff like that. And you're racing against five other armadillos. Now, you're initially starting off on all fours, but once you pick up enough speed, your guy curls into a ball, and you'll want to try to keep him in a ball as much as you possibly can, because that's the most speed that you can pick up. Now, things can get you out of that, like if you crash into walls too much. Obviously, if you fall... like any kind of depth, like if you fall into a river or you take like a fall too hard, stuff like that. And yeah, you're just trying to get to number one. Honestly, the sprint one is way easier, as you might expect, because obstacle courses are, you know, it's full of obstacles, and it will take you like a few rounds to get used to it. But overall, the game is very easy. I'd even say like disappointingly so, because like Aqua Jet, like, you know, you could choose between the difficulty, even if it was just like two different things, but like there was no way to like really ramp up the other armadillos and like with how fast they were. And so there was a little bit of rubber banding at one point, but not really, which I was really surprised by. And then if you finish in first place, you get to play a little mini game, and it's bowling as an armadillo.
Nice.
And it is ridiculously hard. I've only gotten a strike once, but if you get like three strikes, then it makes it so your name gets listed in the, like in the high scores. You get a different color font than everyone else.
Oh, cool.
You get gold instead of red. But if you lose, like you get second place or less than any of them, like first off, you're treated to a scene of your armadillo crying against a tree while a monkey comforts you. And then these two monkeys will hold up a sign that's like, well, at least you tried. All in all, it's really fun. As I said, it's not exactly the most difficult, but you will, and it's real easy to get all 1,000 points if you're an achievement person. But honestly, like much like Aqua Jet and Ridge Racer, these are going to be staying on my Xbox for quite some time. Like, it is real fun to just fire it up and do like a quick 5-minute thing. Whether you're just playing the normal arcade mode or doing high score, which, by the way, I'm 11th in the world. Thank you very much.
Many? 11?
I think it's like 19, but shush. But I still haven't cracked the top 10, but, I want to, though. I really do. Because that's one of those things where it's just like, yeah, that's right. I'm in the top 10 for armadillo racing. Who does that?
You.
Yeah, I know. But so it has like the normal stuff that a lot of the other Arcade Archives titles have. There's a normal mode, high score, time trial, caravan mode, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, as I said, it's a ton of fun. Like, watch
apparently,
a video.
Apparently, this is the first game where the player can have a heart attack.
I'm sorry, what?
Your character can have a heart attack.
How?
I don't know.
What the heck? I never encountered that.
But apparently you can.
Like, there's a little heart meter. Oh, I wonder if it's if you're running too fast for too long.
Maybe.
Huh. Well, on the plus side, I'm not that good at the game.
Yeah, there but, you go. 17 bucks, verdict.
17?
Yes. $16.99.
Okay.
It's a little bit more one of than the I big expecting. Namco system whatever board. It's same as Ridge Racer and...
Honestly, If you're a little, if you feel like that price is a little steep, I can understand waiting for a sale. But this one, in my opinion, this is a definite buy it. This is one of the best Arcade Archive releases of the year. It's a lot of fun. Like, check it out. Like, you really just gotta.
All right. Next up, Arcade Archives 2 Mouser, developed and published by Hamster, also released July 22nd, Series X and S Switch 2 PS5 for $9.99. Mouser is an action game released by UPL in 1983. Take control of the Tomcat Nyanta and rescue his lover, Maria, from her mouse captors. That's an interesting spelling of Maria. The tricky mice will come at you with all sorts of surprises, and Nyanta will need all your luck and help to make it back with his fiance. Jacob, what is going on in Mouser?
So Mouser is an older arcade, much older arcade game. I mean, as you said, it's from 1983. And if you need like a point of reference for similar stuff, like it has similar gameplay to like the original Donkey Kong, Burger Time, stuff like that, where stuff is coming down from the top and you have to avoid it, but at the same time, each level or each floor of each level has characters that will pop out from the left and right, and they're going to come after you, and you have to dodge various things. Now, the main thing, obviously, in Mouser is that you're a cat, and you have mice who are trying to prevent you from getting to your cat girlfriend. And there are blue mice, which you can touch and you'll automatically kill. And there are red mice that you cannot touch. However, they kind of act like that one ghost in Pac-Man that will always stay like a little bit away from you. And so you can... So you can like kind of move towards them and they'll start to run away. However, each level also has a huge dog on it. And the dog will just come out of these random doors. And obviously you don't want to be on the floor at the same time, as that. Now to get up, on these different, floors of each level, you have to use ladders. And the ladders are only extended to the very top by killing off all the other blue mice, or at least enough of the blue mice to make the ladder fall down. And then much like other arcade games from that time period, it's kind of like, it just kind of repeats itself over and over again. There are four distinct levels in this game. And then after the fourth level, it just starts the process over again. It was not exactly the most fun for me. Like, I mean, it's not like I didn't get it, but I found it more difficult than it needed to be. And it really just, like, this is a game that's going to make, like, it's going to eat your quarters over the most BS kind of stuff. And I found it to be more infuriating than anything, because I'd be jumping over some of the mice or some of their attacks, and the game's just like, no, that, like, you definitely got hit by that. And it's just like, that thing was not near me. Like, this is crap. And yeah, I did not make it particularly far in this game.
No.
The levels didn't, like, the level, I never got to see the levels repeat. Yeah, so unfortunately I only saved my cat girlfriend once.
Oh, well, once is better than
none. But I mean, like, yeah, I mean, it's, but the thing is that this is also definitely a title that, is going to bring back nostalgia for some, video game players. And it's cool that this got brought back, because again, I never heard of this game. So it's just like, even though I'm not a big fan of it, you know, I'm glad it's out there again. It's getting its time in the sun. And, you know, it's another solid release from Hamster. It's just, it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah. You know? Quick update. It is not just Series X and S. It is a Play Anywhere title. It is one of the ACA1 to ACA2 conversions that have gotten Play Anywhere coverage. So,
okay. That's cool.
$10. Mouser. Verdict.
I'd give it a try. It. I think you really have to be a fan of that kind of arcade title to really, you know, want to go for this. So I would, as I said, try it.
All right. Moving on, let's talk about Colossus Eternal Blight, developed by Rustic Panda Games, published by Level Up Gaming, released July 21st on Steam for $15.99. Your brother is corrupted. The blight is spreading. Only you can stop it. Colossus is an atmospheric pixel action adventure where you master precise combat, explore vast dark fantasy world, and make choices that permanently scar the kingdom of Arius. Aki, tell us about your time with Colossus Eternal Blight.
Okay, so this is your standard older-style action RPG. You run around as this young man with a sword, and you're able to dodge. And you can perfect dodge if you dodge again during your dodge at just the right time. You can just keep doing that forever. Really, which is great, because it immediately teaches you that during a race, and it took me so long to beat that race, because, controllers just have a little bit too much freedom, and you are very easy to just whack into a wall, a rock, a tree, another wall, another 18 walls, you know, stuff like that. So, in this place, there's these knights that go around protecting the world, basically, from this ancient evil referred to as the Blight. And it is basically just some force that corrupts other creatures. And it turns out your brother, which is the captain of the super-duper knights, whatever the hell they're called, I think they're like the special guardian knights or something like that, happens to have gotten infected at some point. Whether he's completely lost himself in the sauce or not, we don't know. So it's up to you to start solving this place's problems, because the entire world is starting to also become affected by the blight. The interesting thing in this is, not only is it an action RPG game, so you're whacking things in the face real time, it's great, but it also has this really scary, really terrible mechanic where other characters are infected by the blight. You have to figure out who they are and try to get them out of it, or they go the way of the dodo, and you never see them again. And the problem is, that can affect other characters in the game. For instance, the very first character, and it is part of the story, you get hit with this, is Primrose, who is like your childhood best friend and clearly has a thing for you, but you're a dense dumb fuck with a sword. So you care about the sword, and are completely oblivious to her pining for you. She gets hit with it. It's an automatic thing. It's pretty early into the game, so I'm not worried about spoiling that. And she starts behaving weirdly, and the game outright tells you, and it's like, okay, you have to deal with this. It is on a time limit. It doesn't tell you what that time limit is, but it's like, you have to figure out exactly how they're being weird, and you have to confront them with it, try to help them through their funk, or else they'll disappear from the game, and bad things happen. She happens to be the daughter of the blacksmith who can upgrade your weapons. So guess what happens if you fuck that up? And yeah, I kind of sort of did the fucky wucky and messed it up. Oh, hold on. Sorry about that. That was my phone going off because someone was calling me. Obviously.
Nice. I'm reading up on the Steam page. I like the fact that the blight isn't just the enemy. You can actually use it.
Yeah, I didn't. And because you're also in somewhat kind of infected with the blight. So you get to use that to actually enter this other realm, basically. Where basically anyone who's touched by the blight can find themselves. And in it, you're actually able to go around this place and faff about. It basically acts like a procedurally generated dungeon, more or less. And every area, it says, okay, do you want to go this path, or sometimes it'll have multiple paths. You never know. And it basically tells you it's a fight. It's fight with elites. It's a treasure. You can rest here. Things like that. And you pick your path through it. I believe the Blight also is some magical stuff that you can learn later in the game. I did not get access. I did not get that far into it to access that. So I believe there's actually abilities as you become more blighted, I guess we'll call it, because it is clearly festering in you while you're helping people, because the Blight basically seems like it's like, oh, hey, we're depression.
The way the page is making it seem is that you can sacrifice people to the Blight to gain power.
Oh, I just thought that they died and bad things happened. I didn't realize I was getting stronger by letting bad shit happen.
It says, if you're willing to walk a darker path, the Blight itself offers power. Corrupted abilities that can turn the tide of any battle at a price. But beware, okay, those lost to the Blight are gone forever, and your choices are permanent.
Okay, yeah, that might be why I wasn't getting that, because the moment Penrose went away, I was like, oh, I might need to rethink how I was playing that, and started doing things very differently. Okay,
you should retackle this one.
Uh-huh, sure. When I have time. Yeah, we'll do that. But yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with this. I do at some point want to do a full No One Dies playthrough, which is going to be hard, because one of the reasons why I stopped focusing on Primrose is because I couldn't find one character that I needed to find to maybe be able to solve her issues. And I got distracted, because that's what happens in these games. And I want to do like a I saved everyone route, and then a I didn't give a shit about anybody but myself route. But this is not a particularly short game. You can, as I said, her father is the guy who can upgrade your stuff. It requires you to get materials that you can only get from fighting enemies, and you don't get them in high quantities, and they use a lot per upgrade, and each upgrade just requires more and more and more of them. So you're going to be farming a lot. So this is not a particularly short game. Yeah.
All right. Well, $15 on, or $16 on this one. What do you think?
I have trouble imagining who wouldn't enjoy this game, so I'm all for it.
And it is in early access, so more content is likely to come as the game progresses.
Nice.
They estimate the final game to have around 15 to 20 hours of content. There you go.
I have a feeling I'm going to spend probably more than double that in just one playthrough, but sure.
There you go. Up next is Feudal Baron King's Land, developed by SimFarm and Playway, published by Ultimate Games, who were awesome enough to hook us up with some extra copies of this one. We'll be giving them away. Should we give one away right now?
Sure.
Duh.
Let's do this. Giveaway. Draw. Congrats to... Are you frigging kidding me? I'm drawing a second winner. Giveaway. Draw.
Yay,
Latino
me.
Heat wins a copy of the game, as does this moron on the show. Codes will be sent out. Again, Feudal Baron King's Land, developed in by SimFarm and Playway, published by Ultimate Games, released July 16th. Series X and S for $14.99. In Feudal Baron King's Land, you play as the ruler of a medieval barony. You start with just a few followers in their leaky tents. Are you a leader shrewd enough to turn your lands into a bustling city? In this strategic city builder, you'll get to live in the Middle Ages, constructing buildings, producing and delivering resources, and fighting off raiders until you're strong enough to challenge the king himself. Bree, what is Feudal Baron King's Land?
This is a medieval-themed strategic city-builder game. You have to account for all the aspects of life, from like food to shelter, religion, education, recreation, agricultural lands, and even graveyards. There are three versions of the game to play. There's a campaign, there are scenarios, and then there's free mode. Scenarios are five shorter experiences with varying difficulty, like the Brewers Guild wanting you to help with their business is on the easy side. And then there's building up and recruiting hunters to protect your society from werewolves. That's like a medium difficulty one. And then the challenging Viking invasion scenario. Free mode is a little more relaxed, but also freeform. It has no direction, but allows you to choose your difficulty level between easy, medium, and hard. You start with basic money, a tiny settlement, and open land with resources waiting to be collected. You really have to know what you're doing. I highly recommend playing the campaign first before you do anything else. Even if you're seasoned at these sorts of games, free mode is definitely a you know this game as much as you also know City Builders. The campaign is the meat of the game, and was where I spent all of my time. It's the beginning of the 13th century, and you are a small group of people trying to survive. The Lord has lost his titles and inheritance, and the inheritance was like seized by the king, and all that's left is this valley and its natural resources. The story is told in text pop-ups and through the help of your father's former advisor who has followed you, his baron, to this valley to farm the land he still owns, which is, you know, fertile or something. You get a tutorial that you can tailor somewhat to your needs through the use of a mystic or otherworldly visions to tell you about game interfaces and management bars. So let's talk about those. In case you're unfamiliar with how City Builders often work, on the top of your screen, there's a bar with details about your population, the happiness level, your gold funds, resources, the date, and you have the ability to pause the game or speed it up while things are just building. These bars have some multi-button presses that are under the segments. There's a little indicator under the segments that show you how you can interact with them for further detail. Like, you can sort your population view by age group, infirmity, or class. You have to keep your people happy, or they may run away, break things, or start a rebellion. You have to click on the plus sign in the middle of the bar to open up a resource map that shows nearly 50 types of resources you can build or acquire. You can even track certain resources at the click of a button. You can click on your settlement to get a quick glance of resources and population, including names of citizens, and that serves in much the same way as the bar above, but for specific settlements that haven't yet been joined into a larger whole. You have bottom buttons that allow you quick access to things like road creation, military actions, buildings, and the ability to demolish, along with other kinds of management like trade. And on the left are pop-ups and layers. You have some information pop-ups or warnings that you're getting close to something negative or you need to pay someone some money, specifically the king. And you have campaign quests like building specific things. Layers are really helpful. That you can click on and see things like just your residence or the health and happiness levels or the defense or problems and disease and production. And there are some regular actions you'll have to take, like paying tribute to the king, as I mentioned. This game is pretty detailed without being too overwhelming for a city builder. You have political management and even battles to add to your building experience that add some immersion to this game. And as much as you can get from a top-down view game. I mean, I'm not saying this is a thoroughly immersive game, but it's pretty immersive for this style of game. Yeah. You're making a whole medieval society where you have to feed people and rule them and defend them from peril. I mentioned the combat. This isn't just an automated mode. You actually get to go into a battle mode and actually command your troops. It's not as deep as a real-time strategy game, but it's more involved than what you might expect in a city builder, which is nice. In practice, it was not that fun. You place tiles on a grid, and you lose the fun of your animations, which is something they did well in this game. It's a strategy map where you can place traps, move squads, and make melee or ranged attacks. There's also a bit of a political system you can mess with, like dealing with taxes, having festivals to boost morale, You can also make decisions that bring in combat, like not pay your tribute to the king in hopes that his army won't crush all of your hard work. Or ultimately, the goal of the campaign is to do exactly that, is like, screw you, king. I built up this army and all of these people with their awesome resources and buildings, and I'm going to become king now. Screw you. You also have to deal with range. It's a layer to things that I found a little frustrating at first. But I like, it wasn't well explained as a function. So I went to the developer's notes on Steam, and they explained that it's about building and workers having a limit to their support, but you have an amount of control over it. And once I got the hang of it, I felt like it was an interesting choice to leave that in the hands of the player instead of automating it. It gave me more planning control once I understood how and what I was planning. I also recognize this as a controversial feature for many Steam users. Because I can, or even just as someone who's not as well versed in this genre of game, it was a layer that I didn't need because I didn't know what I wanted to plan or how I wanted to plan it because I'm not used to doing that. Some settings of note, you can invert Y, you can control this on console with a keyboard and mouse if you select that option in the settings. I think the controls on console were about as good as you could expect for a PC port in the city builder genre. It was a little hard to remember quickly which combos of buttons did what. Like, the general setup is left bumper plus a button on the D-pad. The rest is fairly cursor-based, but in a way that makes sense on console. Sometimes when moments got hectic, it felt a little too complex, but there were some options to manage things that were redundant, and you can always slow down the speed. You know, you've got some options if you're, and again, if you're a seasoned veteran of the genre, I feel like this is going to be a pretty easy one. I felt like this one was pretty accessible. Graphically, I felt like this was pretty good. You have, trying not to sneeze. You have good zoom functions and a large map. All right. A large map to move around. Oh my gosh. You can zoom into the point where you can see the animations of your little people doing all the things. Buildings get built in stages with smoke effects and dust. There's also good weather effects and moving vegetation when you zoom in real close. Like, I thought it was pretty cool. The medieval style music track that looped in the background was pleasant. The achievements felt straightforward for things like hosting a festival or achieving city status, completing each of the scenarios and completing the campaign. Like, there was nothing weird there, nothing too difficult. But this is a style of game that needs patience. And while I love the medieval angle to this, I'm just not as adept at the genre. I think that with more time, I could have gotten a lot further with this one than I have with previous city builders or tycoon-style games. Like, there's enough depth to this that it makes it a challenge to talk about or play for the uninitiated, and yet was accessible by the theme. Like, at least to me, it was. It didn't seem as tedious as a modern city builder like Skylines or something. I would reiterate here, though, that this is slow and methodical of a game.
Yeah.
Where you increase your empire at a medieval pace. And that's not always action and excitement, despite that high combat expectation other media would give us of the Middle Ages.
If you're doing a building management sim, I don't think you're in it for the action.
Right, but there was, you know, like I said, those combat sections that you had control over. So, like, there's an interesting balance of things in this game that I thought was different from others I've run into. So, while I'm not a huge fan of tycoon or city builder style games as a general rule, this was a pretty good one.
All right, well, it's $15. What do you think?
I think even if you're new to the genre, you can enjoy this. The campaign was well built to guide your first journey into the life of a feudal baron. The other modes offer a challenge once you've done the campaign. That was a nice addition. I think the price is excellent for what you're getting here. It's a pretty balanced experience with only a few bugs and hiccups. While I wouldn't call this the gold standard in the genre, like, I can easily give this a try. It was really fun. Yeah.
All right, let us talk about a two-pack of games from Ocean Media. Amazing Weekend Search and Relax, developed by AV Games, published by Ocean Media. Released July 14th, Xbox One, Series X and S for $6.99. Take a break from the daily hustle and bustle, enjoying exciting activities with improved graphics and more detailed locations. Spend unforgettable moments away from the urban bustle, going hiking, horseback riding, and boating. Use your skills and knowledge to find all the hidden objects and complete the minigames. Jacob, did you have an amazing weekend searching and relaxing?
Well, I did plenty of searching. I don't know that I'd call it relaxing. So much like the other titles on this, it is a, much like other Ocean Media titles that I've reviewed, these are hidden object games where obviously you have to find objects. Sometimes they're related to, the picture, sometimes not. It could be stuff like a weather vane, a tomato, a cat, who knows? But there are pets that you have to search for in each picture, and along with it, you have to find a certain amount of items. Now, you do get scored on it in kind of like a doesn't really matter, to be honest. Like, I guess you could have bragging rights for this game. But much like the other Ocean titles that have been brought to Xbox, if you use the magnifier, which requires you to hit one button, and then you have to, like, move your cursor around with the right stick, it is absolutely slow as hell. Like, insanely slow. And I just, like, Ocean, if you're listening, please, for the love of God, make it so you can edit the sensitivity on this thing, because I spend more time just dragging my cursor across the screen than I do actually playing the puzzles, like trying to find stuff. Like, it is, it's frustrating with these kind of titles. And on top of it, there was a little bit of a language difference with it, and now I'm forgetting what the heck it was, but it was it was a piece of furniture that, like, over in the UK it's called something else, but here in the US it, you know, it's obviously called something different, and I don't remember what the heck it was. But I know, like, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to have to use a hint on that one just to figure out what it is. Or you could just keep clicking until the game makes your cursor move around, and then you have to reset it.
There's always something like that in those games. And like, yeah. I learn something new every time, but it is frustrating. Like, I didn't know what a DOP kit was. Do you guys know what a DOP kit is?
Nope. I don't.
It is a men's toiletry kit. That's all it is. But I don't know why it's named that, but that was a thing I had to learn for one of those Ocean Media games recently. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's going through like a number of different scenes. As I said, you have to also click on various cats and dogs that show up throughout the game. You get extra bonus points, and then it also throws in bonus items, which are usually hidden by a shadow. And then you have to figure out what the, like, is this a chair? Is this, you know, is it a bicycle? All that kind of stuff, and figure out where exactly it is on the, you know, where it is on the map, or not on the image, but it also might be hidden inside another image. Yeah, it's okay. Like, it's fine.
I should also mention the collector's edition. I was going to say the collector's edition includes 12 additional levels with hidden object and mini games, 8 additional mini games, and a souvenir shop with trophies.
Yep. So if you do, like, if you meet certain objectives on different levels, pictures as they are, then you get different trophies for doing that kind of stuff. The next one is very similar in that regard.
Well, should we talk about the next one then?
Yeah, we can.
All right. Sweet Home Lookin' Fine, developed by AV Games, published by Ocean Media. Released June 15th on Xbox One Series X and S for $6.99. Sweet Home Look and Find features a variety of homes, yards, and natural locations, each with its own unique atmosphere and style, and hidden objects to discover. Relax and enjoy finding objects, solving puzzles and minigames in a game with improved quality and increased detail. Embark on an exciting journey to various places that are imbued with warmth and comfort. Jacob, did you look and find in your sweet home?
I did, and it is very much similar stuff. You're hunting for, and in fact, actually, I realized I was getting a detail mixed up on the two. So both of them, you still have to find pets. Amazing Weekend Search also throws in that one raccoon that that there's like a series where. Like there's always like this one raccoon hidden on every single thing.
Yeah,
he's an Amazing Weekend Search and Relax. But the titles are very similar. And this is another hidden object game. Use the magnifier. You curse yourself because you're playing this game on an Xbox and not on an iPad. And the magnifier is absolutely slow as molasses because you're having to use the right stick. And the devs absolutely refuse to have any kind of joystick sensitivity included in this game.
That's harsh. It's just analog sensitivity feels like such a basic thing to add to these games.
It really does. Like, I just don't get it. Especially with the amount that they churn out, it's just like, because obviously these do well enough to get to just keep releasing these on Xbox.
Yeah.
Like, just toss that in, like, please, like to me, that would be the content that I'd actually want. I like cool that it's a collector's edition and it comes with 12 extra puzzles. Great. You know what I really want out of one of these games? I want like joystick sensitivity, for the love of God, please.
Yeah, that is fair. So between the two games, what kind of differences are there?
So the biggest difference, honestly, is in Amazing Weekend. The magnifier actually goes up quite a bit, like two or three times more than Sweet Home does. However, that does come at a problem because your cursor, even though you think you have it lined up, it doesn't actually line up with the image. And so you've focused in on like a certain object and you're like, okay, that's the paint bucket I need to click on. And you're clicking on it and all of a sudden, like, the picture goes away. Cause it's like one of those like picture within a picture things. And so what ends up happening is that you have to click on that thing again, remove all like the magnification that you did and then click on it normally. But of course, you don't have the sensitivity on the joystick, so it takes forever to remove it. And these things become this almost like Sisyphean task. Like, it's just, it's frustrating because honestly, Amazing Weekend Search and Relax is the better game out of the two, but it's just like the lack of being able to change how quickly your cursor moves, like, it just screws these games up so badly. And I just, it frustrates me so much because it's just like, these
are good and they're fun, but just technically, yeah, you need to be able to move faster.
Yes, absolutely. I've played like hidden object games by other devs that also have a magnifier. They don't have this kind of problem. Like, come on, Ocean. Like, shoot an email to somebody if you need tech support. Like, come on.
I don't know if that would be an Ocean thing or an AV Games thing.
Well, the thing is that everybody, like, it's like all of Ocean's titles suffer from this. So, like, it's got, like.
Hopefully they hear this and take the feedback and, we see some cursor sensitivity options because, you know, on a computer, you can move your mouse as fast as you want. On a controller, you're limited by what the game allows you to do.
Mm-hmm. Or on an iPad, you could just boop,
tap on
move your finger. Yeah.
All right. Well, these two are $6.99 each. Give me your verdicts on both of them.
If you're into hidden object games, you already know what you're getting into. If you're into hidden object games on console, you already know what you're getting into. So if you like that genre, these are fine. If not, this is a try at best. Ocean and devs, please work on that, on the cursor sensitivity. Please, for the love of God.
All right, let's move on to Nightmare Shift, developed by Binary Lunar, published by Ultimate Games, released July 30th on Series X and S, August 13th on PS5 for $11.19. Take on night shifts at a remote motel, handle unsettling guests, and navigate eerie events. Experience Emma's unnerving apartment life, feel the unease of being watched, and question what's real as the line between reality and nightmare blurs. They say the walls have ears, but what if the walls have eyes? Watching, waiting, seeing everything you do. Everything, Jacob. Everything, Jacob.
Even when I go pee?
They're watching. They're waiting.
You're supposed Ultimate to be subscribing to awesome. Only fans for that.
Ultimate Games was awesome enough to hook us up with some extra keys for this one, and we will do giveaways for this one in a future episode, so stick around and stay tuned with us. Make sure you join us on Twitch for our live shows so that you could be a part of the action when we do the giveaway for this one. Sound good?
Yeah, I guess.
All Sounds right, great. Well, everyone covered this one. Aki, Jacob, Bree, who wants to start?
I can start. So I haven't played very many games like this because I've got two kids who are still kind of young and they nearly pissed themselves during an episode of Goosebumps. So scary things are not exactly big in our house. So I don't really get to play a lot of these. And this game very much takes a note from older survival horror games made in the late 90s, early 2000s. And you are playing this woman who has started up a new job at this hotel. And, of course, you're working the...
day shift.
No. Try again.
Mid-afternoon shift.
You are the worst.
The cashier.
Lunch position. Hour rush.
Oh my, yes, you play. Yes, this is a lunch hour rush at a motel. God.
Okay.
I'm good at this.
Anyway, so you're playing the night shift, and of course, you're all by yourself. Ugh, and the guy
night shift, like the nightmare. Yep.
Right. And so the guy who works. I mean, there's food down in the basement.
Sweet.
So, I mean, I guess you could eat that. But, anywho. So, the guy introduces you. The guy who was working the shift before you is just like, okay, here's this. This is what to expect. Make sure that you're regularly checking the CCTV. Looking out for weird stuff. Because, stuff... it's, generally okay, but... weird stuff can happen after dark, and make sure that door is locked after midnight. And you're checking in various people. Some of them are really nice. Some of them are not so nice. And also you're dealing with some sort of a crank caller who knows an awful lot about you. And it is pretty much your job to take care of your guests as best as you can, while also staying alive, and then you go home at the end of your shift, where you also have to, you get treated to moments where you have to stay alive. It's an interesting game, to say the least. I don't know if you guys want to cut in before we start talking about pluses and minuses on it, or
yeah, Aki, chime in. What are your thoughts?
Graphically, it's lower end, but these are, you know,
nobody's mouths move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I was that. Like, what?
These are made to be simple, fairly quick little horror games just to give you a little bit of creep factor. They're not, you know, any AAA amazing thing. This is very much like a one or two people operation, probably. And, yeah, it, you're going to have to play through this multiple times because there's four different endings. I think it's four.
Yeah, there are four.
So, yeah, and I'm pretty sure you actually have to play through the whole game each time. There's supposed to be a level select, but that's...
It doesn't work.
Yeah, no, that's broke as shit. It just sends you right back to the very beginning of the game, as I found out. Yeah. It's a game. It does exist.
Free.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to just kind of... I have some notes that are kind of like, here's some pluses and minuses. There were a lot of little things that I found disorienting about the game. There was, like, the breathing motion, the letter of the text, the font, and the subtitle. Like, they appeared in a fashion that was, like, big to small, and it blurred, and it made it hard to read at the speed I'm used to. The character models moved kind of weird.
Extremely weird, yeah.
I don't want to give away who's who, but there was one character in particular that was kind of like weirdly bow-legged and just like his shoulders were awkward and I didn't know what was going on with it. It was voice acted and the acting was good for what I would call a budget title. The graphics, again, were pretty good for what this was.
Honestly, I was surprised with the voice acting. It was better than what I was expecting.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, nobody's mouths moved.
Right.
So it was kind of weird.
And the shadows and lighting were done really well, considering how much time you spend at night or in the dark. Like, there were these really great, creepy moments that were done with just light and shadow instead of jump scares, and I really appreciated that. Sometimes buttons were finicky or hotspots appeared on the screen and nothing would happen when you pressed X. That was frustrating. Yeah. Like, trying to put in the code on the door every day was so annoying.
We're just trying to open up doors.
Yeah, yeah. The story was pretty interesting, which is good, because it's a pretty simple adventure with some puzzle elements and tasks. I wouldn't call it a walking simulator, but it does have story triggers like one. And there was a pretty cool nightmare scene that I liked. I felt like the objective representation was hidden, and the objectives themselves were harder to navigate than I would have liked. And again, the cursor for items was finicky. I had an objective glitch on me with a trash bag I threw in the dumpster, not counting, and then I had to like reload the game from the beginning of that chapter.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and if you do, like, if you make progress in a chapter and then have to, like, go upstairs and your Xbox turns off because you're upstairs for more than an hour, it starts you at the beginning of the chapter, not where you were. So, but I mean, like, all those things are just kind of like little criticisms or like positives that I found in there. Like, I actually had a pretty good time with it.
Yeah, I like, honestly, it was sufficiently spooky. Like,
yeah,
I dug it for what it was.
All right. Well, let's talk price. It's $12. What does everybody think of Nightmare Shift?
I'd put it at a try it at the very least. Like, I mean, if you're a fan of retro horror inspired titles, then it's a buy it. If you're not, then I would put it at a try it. But like, honestly, it was more solid than I was expecting.
Same.
There's still plenty of work that needs to get done on it, but in its current form, it's very, at the very least for me, it's a try it.
And I would say it's a good price. I'm intrigued with the story. There were some good twists, and I want to get all the endings. So try it for me.
I think it's a buy it, but I am biased. I like these styles of little horror games. These are very much my kind of bite size, you know, I definitely have some time for this game style game. So I think it's a buy it as long as you understand what you're getting into with this. Cause again, it is a very indie, you know, not very many, not very much many people, not very much budget style game. As long as you're good with that, I totally think this is worth buying. It's fantastic.
Very good. All right, we got one final game, kind of a bundle to talk about. The Rapid Snail Bundle featuring Cyber Tank Pink. Developed by Rapid Snail, published by Zidalon. Cyber Tank Pink released July 22nd on Xbox platforms for $4.99 each. The Rapid Snail Bundle is available for $19.99 and includes all versions plus other titles and stacks. Cyber Tank Pink is a challenging puzzle game which adds various mechanics on top of the Sokoban genre. This one should be simple enough, but we're going to cover the whole bundle. It's got four Cyber Tank games, Shapik the Quest and Platzl, or Shapik the Quest and Platzl. The Cyber Tank games are all kind of the same, so let's talk about Cyber Tank Pink first. What's going on in this one?
You have a woman pilot.
Yeah, that's really it. Otherwise, it is just Cyber Tank.
With a pink hue.
Yeah. The Cyber Tank games, you play a tank. You can go around and collect three little cubes, and you exit the level. You have to occasionally shoot things with the tank that push it, either pushing something away or getting it to angle into reflectors to destroy something or push something yet again for the 5 billionth time. And yeah,
I mean, it's Sokoban. You know what you're getting into if you're getting the Cyber Tank games. They're more the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you have some turrets that you can either push, block the barrels of, or occasionally destroy. You push crates in front of the turrets to keep them from shooting at you, or you push them into water to create a little path that you can drive on, and that's the entirety of the mechanics of the game. These are very simple games. They're Sokobons. They're simplistic, so yeah.
Jacob, anything to chime in on Cyber Tank?
Not really. I mean, it's not that much different from the other titles.
Which we have reviewed.
Yeah. So go back and listen.
Go find the episode by watching all of them until you get to it. Starting from number one, it would be my preference, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that way you fully understand the lore.
Exactly. And the lore is very important.
Yes, it's all like
right, what is Shapik the Quest?
I've actually played this one too.
Go for it.
It's a little point and click adventure. You have like I mean it's been years since I played it, but that was a really cute one. It's like you've got the puzzles I remember being a little obtuse though. There's like, you know, snails and
they're
mushrooms
extremely
and
obtuse for me. I got into this and I was like, the fuck am I doing? But yeah, you play as this gnome, I guess.
I think so. Yeah.
And you have a little bee that follows you, and you can occasionally send it to go do stuff. Otherwise, you're marching your little character around, interacting with people, trying to solve puzzles. If you can figure out what the puzzle even is in the first place, to figure out how to solve it anyways.
That is the challenge.
Yeah, because not really any language displayed in this game. And like one of the puzzles was, someone was speaking to you and basically it just showed a soup. Okay, so I got so I went and started collecting a boiling soup on a fucking stovetop, and I went and started collecting the various ingredients that were around because we were at a farm field, and I'd hand him something and he'd be like, no, that's not it. I'm like, well, it's a black and white drawing, and it doesn't show any goddamn vegetables in it. So what am I supposed to get? You give me some more information here so I know what to grab. And eventually I grabbed the right items because I was just grabbing everything. I don't know how you were supposed to know what the correct thing was without just going through them, because literally it was just a boiling pot that had soup in it. And I was like, well, there's vegetable ingredients all around me, so one of these has to be right, and two of them, I think, were right, and all the rest of them were wrong, and I just kept handing him shit until I got it right, because I was like, yeah, one of these is going to be right. And yeah, that was about where I quit, because I was like, I am not enjoying this one. I get why you don't want to use words in games, because then you don't have to translate all the written stuff, which is great. That's why a lot of games do use pictures, is so everyone can kind of get it, and that is an amazing thing. The problem with that is you have to make sure people know what the hell the picture is. Like, for instance, showing boiling soup does not tell you what of the, like, 20 ingredients you have as options, as vegetables to go into it. It doesn't tell you what ones are in it. So we need, like, another picture to go with it to tell us what the vegetables were. Then we could have looked around for them. It would have made it a lot faster.
Bree, was this game too smart for Aki?
No, it is tough. I did beat it, but it took me like 6 hours easily.
Yeah, I don't think the game is particularly tough.
I remember looking up some things because I was a little confused.
Mm.
But this was a few years ago. So it is tough, but there are some guides out there. Also, this had relatively recently got a title update for which I have not done, because I think I logged back into the game and I was like, what?
There goes my completion.
I may have to like replay the game.
Jacob, any thoughts on Shapik?
I just didn't do well, and for me it was just a lot of clicking and hoping I could figure out what the heck was going on in it, and a lot of the times I could not.
The game doesn't even highlight what you can click on or anything, so you literally click around until you're like, oh, hey, here's something that I can interact with. What does it do?
All right, what about Platzl? Who played this one?
I believe that was the one where you were playing as a weird thing that was dealing with like four-legged spider things while doing different jumps and stuff. Yeah, so we reviewed this. Platformer,
which you have to act fast and think carefully.
Yes. Aki did not like it. And no, I did not like it. I loved it.
Yeah,
I absolutely loved Platzl. I mean, it's been a while, but
Are cards.
Yeah, they're cards. And so you have to kind of like, you have a finite amount of cards, or like, I don't know, maybe you can pick some up on the map. I don't remember.
You can, on some of the levels, you can pick some up.
Yeah, some of the levels I thought you could. And then there's like cards that do special things, like change gravity or teleport you and stuff like that. And it was just really clever puzzle solving. The downside is the bosses were really hard because they are also a puzzle, but you have to move fast for them.
Yeah, you have to dodge attacks, and I was fucking god awful at that. And the amount of like, oh, you have to jump and then immediately dodge to get this item so you can jump again in the middle of you falling, and I just don't have the visual acuity for those reaction times. I did not.
And it also got a DLC like sometime in the last year that was just to kill the bosses.
After our review was done, and I was like, oh, you son of a bitch. It took me forever to get. I only got through like two of the bosses, and I was stuck on the third one. I could not beat it. And then after our review, like a week later, it got that title update. And I'm like, man, I'm never going to be able to beat those first two bosses again, let alone actually get through the third boss. What the fuck?
Yeah. It was, I thought it was great. It's kind of a platformer and it's kind of a puzzle, but it's not like your typical puzzle platformer because you have to do everything through these cards. And I just thought it was really clever.
All right, well, let's talk about price on everything. All of the games are $5. The Cyber Tank game has three versions. All of the Cyber Tank games have three versions. Platzl and Shapik just have the one version. If you buy the bundle for $19.99, not only do you get all of them, but you will likely get any future Cyber Tank games as well. because the cyber tank pink was tossed into the existing rapid snail bundle.
Yeah.
So Zidlon has been doing this stuff, and I love that Zidlon has been just adding games to their existing bundles. That is such an awesome way to treat customers and the people who buy in early and believe in what you do. I think that is awesome. But $20. What's everyone think?
If you like these kind of games like Sokoban, honestly, based on a lot of the other ones that we've played on this podcast, like, they're a hell of a lot more visually engaging and more challenging than a lot of them. So if you like Sokoban, $20 is a great price for this thing. Especially if on the off chance that you do get future titles out of this. The other two titles, I don't really have as much to say on it, but
yeah,
you know, still for $20, $20. I mean, yeah, $20.
You're getting a discount by getting the bundle. If you don't have all these games already, like, it's a pretty good price for a lot of game. And to me, I think Platzl is great, and I thought Shaping the Quest was pretty good from what I remember. Just, it is a challenging point and click for sure. And again, Cybertank, I mean, like, I can definitely give this bundle a try. It, like, that's an easy thing to say.
Aki.
I think most of the games are fine. There was a couple of them, like, obviously I did not get along with Platzl whatsoever. But most of them are pretty good, and I think the price is definitely worth it, especially when you're getting just so many games. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
And also, if you're an achievement hunter, then holy crap.
Oh, yeah, like, you're going to be playing these games for the next, like, 3 or 4 years as they occasionally get, you know, their little updates, and they're like, oh, yeah, here's, like, another 1,000. It's one of those style games. So, you're going to be playing this individual game for some time, I think.
All right.
Which is, you know, nice, because, you know, money's at a premium these days, so.
It sure is.
Yeah, any chance you get to, you know, get a bunch of free title updates, and you're getting free games as they add stuff to it, that's nice. Like, that's really, really cool of them, because it's not like they ever had to do that or anything. So. Yeah.
But with that said, we are done with this episode. I want to thank the three of you for being here the whole time. Big thanks to Flick for coming on and hanging out and chatting with us in the first half of the show. Music. Another Mustin song?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Mustin from his Final Fantasy VI album. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. More Mustin is coming up. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Nope.
Don't lick the rainbow.
Don't lick the rainbow? What?
I heavily disagree with that sentiment, but okay.
You would disagree if you knew what it was in reference to.
Oh.
What kind of rainbow are we licking?
You're not licking. Don't lick the rainbow, I'm telling you. It's not healthy.
I don't think I can trust you. What is Big Rainbow trying to hide from us?